Adventures in Sci-Fi Publishing, Episode 180, Interview with Jason Denzel of Dragonmount.com. Jason is going to give us an inside look of the forthcoming and final Wheel of Time novel, but don't worry, this episode is spoiler-free. This episode is brought to you by Rogues of the Black Fury, the new novel from Travis Hearman, and by Dark Victory from Michelle Lang.
It's basically about the business of writing, and they tell you the stuff they wish that someone had told them when they got started as writers.
You know, somebody can be a successful marketer and not necessarily provide a quality product.
I'm going to let Moses go because he's frothing at the mouth to talk about this one.
I like writing. I like reading. I like to immerse myself in books. So that seems like a pretty good career choice.
Domo arigato, Mr. Roboto.
Oh, you sound terrible. What happened? I'm just kidding.
Oh, man.
And now, podstructed on a zeppelin by an apprentice mage and delivered by rocket ship to a benevolent dragon, Adventures in Sci-Fi Publishing.
Hello and welcome to Adventures in Sci-Fi Publishing, your podcast for science fiction and fantasy literature. This is Sean Farrell, and yes, I'm here by myself once again. You know, it seems like, well, it is true that we haven't done as much this year as we have in years past, but I was just looking in the feed and realized that we have still managed to put out 23 episodes this year so far, and then the month just got started, so not too bad. I think we'll hit the 25 mark, and I'll take it considering everything that's happened this year. It's been very eventful, so thank you for joining us again. And I'm very excited to bring to you Moses' interview with Jason Denzel, who's going to give you some behind-the-scenes stuff dealing with the end of the Wheel of Time universe. Brandon Sanderson's final novel is coming out very soon. So we wanted to get this out to you a couple of weeks ahead of time so you could listen to it in anticipation of the novel. Of course, Moses and Jason talk about much more than that, so you'll want to listen to the whole thing, and I'm sure you will enjoy it. We do have more interviews already recorded and ready to go, and I hope to get the team together for a final 2012 recording. I haven't even asked them about that yet, though, so some of them are going to learn about it for the first time when they listen to this, but that's the idea. So I hope everyone is doing well. Thank you for everyone who's following us on Twitter, at AISFP Podcast. You can join us there as well. We have over 700 of you on the Facebook page. So look us up at Facebook, and we'd love to have you as a friend on our page there as well. I guess technically it's a fan, since it's not a page for an actual person. It's an organization, but whatever. I'll be back soon. If you want to get a hold of us, adventuresinscifipublishing@gmail.com. And without too much further ado, here's Jason Denzel.
A new fantasy adventure novel is here, Rogues of the Black Fury by Travis Hearman. Here's what people are saying. Bold, colorful characters pull the reader into an unforgettable adventure with a perfect mix of suspense, intrigue, and action. Gene Cavellos, author of The Passing of the Technomages. Rogues of the Black Fury mixes a berserk action thriller sharp as a mercenary sword with hard-bitten fantasy so gritty it might scour your bones clean by the time you're done. Matt Forbeck, author of The Amortals and Carpathia. Hearman's Rogues is epic, exciting, and a hell of a lot of fun. From the very beginning, the world he crafts feels alive and real. By the last page, I didn't want to leave. Adventure at its finest, honed to a gleaming bloody edge. Marcus Pellegrimus, author of the Skinners series. Rogues of the Black Fury. Trade paperback and all e-reader formats available now from e-reads. Look for it at your favorite online bookstore.
This is Moses Sirigar with Adventures in Sci-Fi Publishing. And today I get the pleasure of talking to Jason Denzel. Jason, say hi.
Hello, everyone.
This is a really cool honor to talk to you. I've gotten to know Jason a little bit recently over the last month or two, and you've really impressed me as just being such a really cool person, just a really genuine, kind, good person. And, of course, you are involved with some really interesting things in the world of fantasy, too. Jason is the creator of Dragonmount.com, if you don't know. This is the largest Wheel of Time fan site in the known universe. It's kind of the this is the premier site. So, you know, if you're looking for Wheel of Time you go to dragonmount.com. He's been doing this since 1998 when you started the site. You've been a Wheel of Time fan, I read today, since you picked up the first book about 20 years ago. And Jason's a really talented guy doing a lot of interesting things in film, and he's writing, and he's connected with some, you know, things that Tor is doing for the Wheel of Time book. So we're going to talk about the Wheel of Time and lots of interesting things that he is doing. So that's just a little introduction to Jason. And I've got all kinds of fun stuff I want to talk to you about. We even got some Twitter questions from some people, too. I think I want to start with the letter that you wrote recently called Dear Robert Jordan. This is your response and your letter to Robert Jordan after reading A Memory of Light, which is the 14th and final book in the Wheel of Time. That's coming out January 8th in hardcover, and the ebook comes out a few months after that. How many people have actually read the book at this point? Do you know?
I'll be happy to answer that, Moses. But real quick before we get in there, I do want to say that, man, it is such a privilege to be on this show. I have a weekly commute that once a week I have to, I get in the car and I drive for about an hour and a half, 2 hours down to the Bay Area from where I live in Sacramento. And on that car ride is when I catch up on all my podcasts. And I've been listening to this show since, I don't know, for years now. And it is always one of my favorites to listen to. I love the quality of the interviews and information that you guys have. It's such a great resource for it's just a great resource for me and what I'm doing, and I can just see for fans in general. So to be on it is a real privilege and treat. So thanks for having me.
That's very cool. Thank you.
So, all right. So I guess that is the kind of A Memory of Light. Right now, for a lot of people listening, especially if you're a Wheel of Time fan, I'm sure that's the 800-pound gorilla that everyone's wondering about when they hear that you've got me on the show. A Memory of Light. How many people have read it? Well, I can say that everyone in Team Jordan, which consists, of course, of Brandon and Harriet and Alan and Maria, have read it, of course, and probably I think they've read it multiple times. The book's actually been handed in to Tor, and so it has left the offices down in Charleston and floated up to New York, which means that it's now in the hands of editors and everything else. So, you know, I know that based on some of the conversations I've had, it's been hinted at, you know, some of the people in Tor have certainly already read it. You know, certainly probably the senior editors, Tom Doherty, has certainly read it by now. I know he's always excited to get, you know, those and read them. I would imagine that if you work for Tor and you're a big fan of Wheel of Time, I suspect that they've probably had a chance to get their hands on and look it over. I do know that Lee Butler, who reads who's doing the Wheel of Time reread on Tor.com,
mm-hmm.
She I was texting with her the other day, and I asked her if she was going to read it, and she said, "I am most definitely not going to read it yet," and because she wants to finish up her reread of the book.
Nice.
Book 13 leading right up to it. So I forget exactly how far along she is in that book, but I imagine that thing's probably going to be burning a hole in her pocket, and she'll get to it pretty soon.
Okay. I mean, you're obviously extremely well-connected in the sort of Wheel of Time universe. Is there like a particular person on, say, Team Jordan or, you know, Tor or something that you have a particular connection with more than others?
Well, everyone on Team Jordan is like an extended version of my family at this point. I mean, I'm really close with all of them. They, Maria and Alan, who were Robert Jordan's assistants, you know, before he died, I had the chance to meet them a couple of years ago and have since see them, you know, once or twice a year at conventions or whatever. And they're awesome and incredible. Harriet has is one of the sweetest ladies I have ever had the privilege of meeting. She's just a genuine, genuinely wonderful person. One time when she was on tour out on the West Coast here, you know, these book tours can be so complicated and busy for the authors and for people traveling. And I know that traveling, especially, you know, on the other side of the country, can be a real toll on Harriet in particular. And despite that, she found the time to come over and come to my parents' house of all places and meet my family and hang out with my kids. And she went to the park with my kids and, you know, was watching them play in the swings and everything. And whenever I get together with her and with Brandon or anyone, we're actually not really talking about Wheel of Time a whole lot. If you can kind of, that seems a little backwards, I know, but it's kind of rare that I have a real long conversation with Harriet about something that is related to Wheel of Time. And I think that that kind of illustrates how it's, you know, those relationships have come to mean so much more to me than just simply, you know, when's the next book going to come out, or what do you think about this plot point, or.
I got you. Yeah, that's cool. That's really neat, man. That's so brilliant. You know, you're just a fan. You were just, once upon a time, you were just a kid picking up this book, you know, and now there you are. Like, you know,
a lot of people have said that to me over the years where, you know, oh, you know, I wish I had the opportunities that you do, you know, to talk to the authors and everything. You're right. I mean, I feel privileged in that way. There was a time before Dragonmount where I remember I wanted to write a letter to Robert Jordan, and I started and stopped it so many times because I just was like, I'm so excited about these books. And in a way I feel so connected to the author, as you know, a reader will frequently do when they just really grok that book. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And you get so excited and you want to say the things so that, you know, the author takes you seriously and gets what you're saying and vice versa. And you're looking for that connection. And I remember I never sent that letter because I could just never really get it into words how it felt. And, it might have been some of that energy that kind of went into, hey, I'm going to make a fan site instead. And that will be my letter in a way to him. And, I think that's how it came about. And so I frequently try to think of, put myself back in those shoes and recognize that I do have the privilege to have Harriet over for a Sunday brunch or to hang out with Brandon at 3 a.m. and play Magic the Gathering or whatever else. And that's something that not all fans are going to have the opportunity to do. And so I always try to represent them in a way. And I try to think of, like, you know, what would they want to do? And I try to share those experiences back with the fans so that they can have a little bit of piece of it as well.
That's great. This letter, it really, I think it's such a beautiful thing. And I really want to recommend for everyone that's listening to check this out. You can go to, I'm sure we'll put a link in our show notes to this letter. It's been featured at a lot of places, including Dragonmount.com. I've seen it at Tor.com and elsewhere. But I really want to recommend for everyone to just read this letter. It's not that long. If you're not a Wheel of Time reader, even if you don't like fantasy, even if you don't like stories, you know, even if you have no heart, like, just read this because it will help you with that heart problem. And really, it's beautiful, and then it made me reflect on, you know, the enormity of the Wheel of Time and what Robert Jordan and Brandon Sanderson have, you know, done there, and it's just really touching. And I think I have, like, my own love for the grand epic, the big story, and then just to see the love that you had for Robert Jordan and the appreciation that you had, it was really touching, and it was inspiring to me. It made me say, gosh, you know, that I would. I mean, that's kind of, I think, every writer's dream, you know, to create something so grand that even after you're not even here, someday someone writes a letter like that to you and people read it and weep and such, you know. So I really want to recommend for people to read it, and I'll give you a little taste of it. And this will lead into some interesting metaphysics. It's another thing that Jason and I have talked about, is we, you know, have some interesting things that we're into in realms of Eastern mysticism and all kinds of fun stuff like that. And maybe we can tie that into the Wheel of Time a little bit. So the letter starts, "Dear Robert Jordan, today I read your final book. The end of the Wheel of Time came to my hands nearly 20 years after I picked up its beginning. It was a story well told, a story whose ending lived up to the promises made so very long ago. I'm writing in order to tell you a little bit about it. What I've loved most about your grand story throughout the years is how true it is. Those who cherish the fantasy genre understand this. Within a story about fictitious people in fictitious worlds with conflicts that never actually happen, we have the opportunity to explore what makes us real. The Wheel of Time has, for me, and I suspect for thousands of others, done that better than any of its peers. One of its most fundamental lessons is that time is a wheel, and that endings are simply new beginnings if you have the courage to turn and look the other way. So this idea of time as a wheel, I'm sure you've had plenty of time to think about this, and it must have influenced your thinking in some ways. Just want to first give you a chance to kind of riff on that theme a little bit, if there's anything that you find interesting about that or any ways that that's touched you.
Well, time as a wheel is, if you're familiar with the Wheel of Time series, is, you know, one of the fundamental themes of the series there. But, you know, I could riff on this all day long. You'd probably write a book about it. And in fact, there is a book coming out that explores a lot of the themes of the Wheel of Time. It's a, I guess maybe we can talk about this a little later, but it'll actually be on the Dragmont.com ebook store. There, an author got together and, sat down with Robert Jordan before he died and wrote a dissertation that she's now publishing, that's all about this sort of thing. But, in brief, you know, I think, right now so many people say, ask me all the time, what's going to happen to Dragmont after the book series is over? And my response, is and has always been that we're going to keep going. The site's not going to end. And in fact, the series is not going to end. And one way this isn't ending, the final book is coming out. And, after it comes out, readership and traffic and all that kind of stuff will probably dwindle off a little bit. But the bottom line, the reality is that Tor has been publishing these books for, since 1990 nonstop. The Eye of the World is still being published in print, despite that it came out in 1990. And that's not going to stop. I mean, for every major bookstore in the country and, wherever else is going to have copies of this still on the shelf. So there's always going to be new readers coming to it. So in one sense, it's ending. But in the other sense, it kind of feels like something new is beginning, a new flavor of fandom. And those familiar with the books, I was kind of equated to the end of one age and we're going into a new age in that. We have other things to look forward to. There's companies out there that are working on the Wheel of Time video games. There's a Wheel of Time movie that is being developed right now by Universal. They have all the rights to do that. And if any one of those happens and occurs, then there's obviously going to be an explosion of new fans coming into it and, reading these books for the very first time. And then there's also the fact that just by the sheer volume and success of the books themselves, and especially this last one, when A Memory of Light comes out, it's going to be the final book. And that's going to be a big story that a lot of the media outlets are going to be able to pick up on. They've been reluctant. There has been a lot of attention in the media from USA Today and Wired and other places that will talk about the books, of course, whenever a new one comes out. But they've really been waiting, it feels like, for the final one to come out so they can make a big story of it. And I imagine that the publicity that will come from this final book will help new people who have maybe heard about Wheel of Time or haven't actually picked up the first book be more interested and think to themselves, hey, this is complete now. This sounds really cool and big and it's epic. I'll check it out. And so there's always going to be new blood coming in. And in that way, I think that we are both at the end of, a turn of the wheel and also, at the opportunity that we're at a place where we can look forward and there's new beginnings, new fans, new tie-ins, new whatevers.
That's brilliant. That's beautiful. So, now that you've read the whole series, you've gotten to the end, what is the message that resonates with you at the end? What do you feel from this grand journey?
The main thing I took is that having read the end and the last chapters and the last scene, and for those who don't know, Robert Jordan was always, for years and years and years, he's been very specific that the last scene of the series was one of the very first ones he imagined, and he actually worked backwards from it. The whole 14-book epic, you know, however many million words, the whole thing in very large part started with that last scene and him then extrapolating out everything that would build up and lead to it. And having read that, the thing that I took away from it is that I got it. I see, knowing Robert Jordan's background, knowing the kind of community he grew up in, knowing the kind of person he was a little bit, and knowing him largely through his writings and his themes and the things that were interesting and important to him that he then explored and studied in his own work, I get the themes that he was going for. And I really kind of see one of the underlying messages that was there. And I get that. And that resonated with me. And so in that sense, you know, all the epic battles are awesome. All the, you know, nitty gritty specifics about how, you know, some characters play out and who lives and who dies and all that kind of stuff. I mean, that's fun. That's interesting. That's compelling. And the fans are, including myself, are, you know, we're very excited to read about that and we're looking forward to that. But really I loved knowing at the end, reading, going, okay, so that's where he was going with that.
So where was he going with that? Like, you know, you're just speaking for yourself. You know, you don't speak for Robert Jordan, Brandon Sanderson, or anyone else. But like, where do you think he was going with it all?
Well, I probably don't want to say too much, Moses, because I think that that's something that a lot of fans would, first of all, kill me for revealing anything that might even hint even close at a spoiler. But also, I think it's something that they ought to. Each person should discover it for themselves. Now that said, I think that's probably the best one. I probably just leave alone. You know, just I'm gonna play the read and find out Raffo card on that too. It's been a long time for a lot of fans and anyone who's listening. I think they've been waiting a long time for it. So I think we'll talk about it after the book is released, but suffice to say that there's some beautiful things in there, and it's definitely discovered best reading it yourself. You know, maybe in my case, you're in a dark room with the kids sent away for the day, house to myself, and you know, just having, you know, a couple hours to finish off the book in a really private environment.
Okay, that's fair enough. You know, we don't want to. Definitely don't want to spoil. So keep that Raffo card out for a minute.
Okay.
I also wanted to ask you, having read the last book, what you feel maybe the thing that was done best about the book, the thing that really, you know, shines for you about the book, and also any, you know, something that you thought didn't shine as much as it could have. Any comments on those points?
Sure. Let's see. Some of the really strong positive points about the book are that the battle scenes are fantastic. I mean, it's no secret that in the final book of a Wheel of Time series that, you know, promises the proverbial last battle, that you're going to have something that is grand and epic. It's been teased, you know, a couple times that there's one chapter in the book that one chapter itself that is 50,000 words long, or maybe more. I've been saying 50,000, but it actually might be a little bit more than that. I forget. There's something like 70 or 80 point of views within that single chapter, and it's despite that, it's probably the fastest I've ever read through 50,000 words. It's incredible. There are some many characters that we've been with for over, you know, a very long time, that we are now saying goodbye to, both because, you know, maybe either they die, or maybe because they have a not so happy ending, or because their endings are just wrapped up in a very, you know, more peaceful way. But either way, there's a lot of emotion in saying goodbye to these characters who are, for a lot of people, you know, kind of like a, you know, cousins and friends and pals that you've had with, you know, for a long time. I know Brandon has said that a lot of the characters are like, were his friends in high school in a way that he, you know, he started reading these when he was a teenager, and you know, now he's like me, you know, in mid thirties and stuff. And so we've had the opportunity to be with these characters for 20 years, whatever. They feel like family in a way. And so to say goodbye to them in some way is, emotionally powerful to read that. Some of the other things that are really good about it is, there's some really clever things that were done with the plot and the way that things played out that, weren't expected. I know that, you know, people are always, especially in this, this book series, fans are always big on speculating, coming up with theories about what's going to happen. And, I'm very happy, I guess, that, you know, many of them, play out in ways that just were, no one could have predicted it. And so, there was no, which was real nice.
There was no, say it again, please.
No sense of, the plot just happening in an expected way.
Right, right. When those things are happening, are those things that Brandon Sanderson put together or things that Robert Jordan had spelled out? Do you know?
That's not always very clear. You can definitely tell if you're pretty familiar with Brandon's work and the way he writes, and you're pretty familiar with Robert Jordan. So you can, it's not very difficult to be able to, pick apart the specific writing that Robert Jordan did versus the specific writing that, that Brandon did. You know, they've got a slightly different, they have a different, overall voice. And Brandon's been very clear since he began taking over the series, wrapping it up, that he wasn't going to try to imitate that voice. And so if you go in and you read, and people who've already read the previous two books that Brandon worked on, then you can pretty clearly pick stuff apart. In terms of who laid out the plot and whatnot, I know that Harriet wrote the original outline that Brandon has been going by for the last 5 years.
Oh, okay.
And so largely on his notes. Now, I also know that there were gaps and there's holes in that outline. And certainly an outline might just say, you know, a battle happens or this person resolves this with that other person. And it may have been up to him to completely invent it as to what happens. And so, what I do know and what is fairly apparent is that the broad strokes are Robert Jordan's. There, no doubt about it. I mean, we aren't, the major events and conflicts leading up to the last battle, the specifics of the major showdowns between the major characters, and then the last chapter itself, the last chapter itself and last scene, everything was all written by Robert Jordan. Brandon just essentially copied, pasted, corrected some typos, you know, clarified maybe a couple of sentences here and there, but for the most part, they're very religious about maintaining that last chapter.
Okay. And any points of the book that maybe a point you thought could have been stronger or something like that?
There were some, and the way that this book came to me was that I was asked, like on the previous two, to be a beta reader. And so a lot of there were obviously, you know, holes and inconsistencies and other little errors and things could have been stronger here and there. But all that feedback I then provided back to Harriet and to Brandon. And to be honest, you know, they have ever since receiving all that feedback, they'd have occasional questions. Marie and Alan would go and ask clarifying questions to make sure that they understood what we were talking about, to kind of really understand the suggestion. But then after that, I've seen the latest version. So the version I read was not the final draft that's going to come out that everyone else is. You know, I'm going to sit down and reread it when it comes out too. So a lot of the things that I felt could have been stronger, I did provide feedback on. So, I don't want to rattle those off because, A, they may not be in there later on when the actual book comes out, and B, professional respect as a beta reader, I don't want to be airing an author's dirty laundry out too much. But that said, the things that people have, I'll say, complained about in the previous two books were, you know, sometimes some of the characters didn't quite feel or sound like they they had been written by Robert Jordan. You know, in book 12, the character, one of the main characters, Matt Coffin, who felt very off to a lot of people. And we know, you know, Brandon has talked about that a lot. And, you know, he was very upfront that, you know, this was a complicated character to write. And he took it from one angle. And overall, it may not have been exactly how Robert Jordan had written it in terms of, you know, the way this character plays things out. Maybe he's a little too goofy or whatnot. And so, you know, he adapted and rolled with it. And so there's more of those changes going into the final book, the 14th one, where a lot of the characters are even more cleaned up. And then there's some others that are still a little bit off. And the thing is, it's always amusing to me that you can talk to 10 different fans and each one will have a different opinion on how close that character is. Some will say that, oh, that character's spot. You know, I thought Robert Jordan wrote it. And some will say, ah, it's clearly Brandon and he's way off. And some they're kind of in the middle of saying, yeah, he sounded okay to me. But now that you mention it, yeah, it could have been off a little bit. So there's that. And, you know, there were some plot points that, you know, being honest, there were some plot points in there that have been done a little bit better. But that's like any book. All I can do is I provided my feedback to Team Jordan, and they'll run with it from there. Ultimately, the broad strokes are there, and it works on such a, you know, such a great level. I mean, regardless of all the nitpicking stuff of whose voice sounded a little bit off or what plot point was a little bit more dull than others, there will not be a dry eye in the house. Something like Return of the King, right? I mean, or Fellowship, Lord of the Rings in general. I'm sure that everyone, even the fans who love it, you know, love it to death and it's their favorite book of all time, you know, maybe a few kind of roll their eyes a little bit at Tom Bombadil, or maybe, you know, kind of, you know, look around and breeze, you know, and skip over the paths of the dead or whatever it is, right?
Yeah, it's impossible to please everybody, you know, and it's impossible to be perfect, you know. It's there's always something that's a little off to somebody, and like you said, people are going to disagree about that too, and that's part of the fun, I guess, of being a fan of something is talking about those little things and hashing it out with people. So thank you for, you know, your honest feedback about the novel, and it sounds like you know, your prediction for how the fans are going to receive the third book. What would you say overall?
I think overall people are
going to say. Did I say third book? I'm sorry.
Yeah, well,
final book. Go ahead.
It's the third Brandon book, but yeah.
Well, okay, that's what I was thinking.
You could be so many ways. You could look at it as the third book that Brandon's involved. You could look at it as the 14th book in the series. If you really want to nitpick about it, it's the 15th book because there was another prequel novel that was written somewhere in the middle there. So, whatever. I think it's fair to say the last book in the series. But to answer your question, yes, I think people are going to love it. And, you know, this will be one that's going to be talked about for a long time, probably debated for a long time, especially, you know, with, you know, some of the, you know, cliffhangers that may or, you know, have been left in places. And I think overall the reception is going to be very positive.
That's great. That's great. So the ebook does come out 3 months later than the hardcover, and how much complaining have you heard about that?
there's been a lot of it for sure. And you know, the series in general has had a really funny and unique experience with ebooks in general. Just to kind of give you a little bit of history there, in 2000. The book that was about to come out, I guess it was 99 when all this planning started, but 99 and 2000, the ninth book in the series, Winter's Heart, was going to be published. And back then, you know, if you think back, if you go in the Wayback Machine to 99, 2000, you know, their ebooks are, you know, Palm Pilots are the latest thing or whatever. And, ebooks exist, but, you know, they aren't as pervasive as they are today. Right. And so, The Wheel of Time, Robert Jordan was approached by Simon Schuster for the ebook rights to the prologue to the ninth book. And just to that. And so that kind of began. And so he sold off just the ebook rights, just to the prologue, to Simon Schuster, which, you know, is, his U.S. publisher, of course, being Tor. So another publisher for that. And the way they tried to add, Simon & Schuster added value to that purchase, they charged $2.99 for it. When, in addition, just so you know, the previous, I don't know, five or six books before that had always, Tor always just put up on their website, put the entire prologue, copy and paste up on website, which, you know, back then it was not nearly as beautiful site as it is today. But they essentially would just go up and paste in the prologue and, you know, for fans to read. And so now Simon & Schuster came along. They were now had the electronic rights so that they would publish it. They would sell it for $2.99, you know, so that fans could read it there. And they also did things where they worked with us and Dragomont.com and a few other websites at the time to do some Q&A with Robert Jordan and a few other things that kind of add value to it. So that trend has continued all the way up until today, where Tor now acquires and publishes the prologue for that same price, $2.99 price point, and does that. And then they also go out and then they publish for free chapters 1 and 2 in either audio or text on the website. But all this is to say is that the ebook journey has been a little bit weird. And one of the other quirky things I said is that they haven't been releasing the ebook at the same time as the hardback book, which obviously has upset some fans. And, you know, I don't know if I have a solid answer for that. I mean, I don't have insight into, you know, I only have speculation into what the reason, rationale is behind it in terms of, you know, both Harriet. I know that she drives a lot of that, and Tor, I think, follows her lead on it in terms of that. I know at one point, I know the things have kind of changed since then, but for a while there was thought, I believe, that but the ebooks wouldn't account for things like the New York Times and other things, and it was for various reasons it was important to get on the Times list. The higher the Times list you go, the more exponential your exposure and sales and everything else are. So I don't know, and I suspect that it's not quite as simple as that. I think that there are other factors in there as well. A big one of which, is that in the past, Tor has always rushed these books to production. And, Moses, having, you know, I know you're involved in, publishing and talked to a lot of authors and publishers and editors over the years. And you realize, you know, it takes time to make an ebook. And to give you an idea, there were times in the past, even, you know, leading up to, including the most two books, you know, after Robert Jordan had died, but even the previous ones, books 10, 9, 10, 11, you know, all been the same way, in that Robert Jordan would finish the book, do a save, you know, Command S, right? Print it out or whatever, and then he would get in the car with Harriet. Sometimes, I think I even heard a story, I don't know if it's an exaggeration, but I think I even heard a story where, like, you know, the car was running in the driveway and he runs out into the car. And they drive to New York and hand the book over to Tor. And 6 weeks later, fans were reading that book.
Wow.
So it's about the most insane and ludicrous turnaround I've heard for a 350, sometimes 400,000 word book, right? And so in a lot of ways, and I know for a fact, having a chance to talk to a lot of people at Tor, that a lot of them work weekends, crazy overtime hours and like the whole Tor machine.
Yeah.
Grinding's halt, and everyone would work on Wheel of Time. And, bottom line is that, like, the Wheel of Time, and I don't know the numbers, but I do know that the Wheel of Time pretty much outsells their entire line otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
One Wheel of Time book for them is enough to give them the opportunity to take a lot of chances on other first-time authors, where because that essentially will, you know, from what I can tell, these are just my words, of course, but, you know, that will keep the lights on in their place, I would imagine, you know, keep the offices and everything going and keep everyone paid and everything. And then the rest, you know, they can take risks on new authors, such as Brandon Sanderson, you know, at the time, who 5 years ago was, you know, a risk for them, right?
Mm-hmm.
When their machine kind of comes to a grinding halt and everyone's focused on it, and to get that book out in 6 weeks is pretty crazy. And then I would imagine that once that dust has settled and they're allowed to go home and have a weekend with their families, they come back and they sit down and say, okay, now what else have we got to do? Oh, we got to do the ebook. Oh, we got to do this. And so in that sense, you know, they, I think that's one of the major reasons that that ebook has been delayed too.
Magna Lazarus was a reluctant witch until the dire threat of Nazi Germany convinced her to assume the mantle of her family's ancient powers. But though this young, beautiful Jewish woman has fought off Hitler's SS werewolves and the demon who would rule through the Führer, she has been unable to prevent the outbreak of World War II. As long as Magna can summon spirits, there is still a chance to save people from the dire threat of the Holocaust. Her family's guardian angel, Raziel, stands beside her in the battle against the human and supernatural forces of evil arrayed against her people and all of Europe. In Michelle Lange's Dark Victory, as the Nazis prepare to invade Poland, Magna and her beloved Raziel marshal their own army, a supernatural force that will battle Hitler's minions to the death or beyond. Booklist says, Michelle Lange is a writer to watch and is sure to have wide appeal to fans of Jim Butcher, Kat Richardson, and other urban fantasy A-listers. And Kat Richardson says, Lange just gets better and better. I can't wait to see what will happen next. To learn more about Dark Victory, the sequel to Lady Lazarus, visit AdventuresInSciFiPublishing.com and click on the image for Dark Victory. And listen to episodes 160 and 122 for our conversations with Michelle. Dark Victory, fantastic new urban fantasy from Michelle Lange.
Okay, that's good. Thanks for talking about all that. As you mentioned, you have an ebook store at dragonmount.com. This is a new thing that you've done. You have a DRM-free ebook store. You have all of the Tor and Forge titles there. So that's over 2,500 titles. You're going to do some independent titles as well right now. There are two in there. but that's, you know, obviously that's a cool thing that you're doing that as well. And so, you know, this is a nice thing because if people want to support this Wheel of Time community fan site that you run, which, you know, you do a lot of great things. You have a podcast, you have a popular Twitter feed, you've got, Facebook/Wheel of Time, which is also has like over 30,000 people on it, I think. This is a great way to support, you know, an underdog, of course. Amazon and Barnes & Noble would like your money too, but I think that's a really cool thing that you're doing that. And as you know, I've, you know, tried to support the store a little bit myself. So that's another thing I want to let people know about. One of the two independent titles that you have in that store is a story called The Stone Golem of, would you say, Qualjam?
Qualjam.
Qualjam. Which is your short story. And I've actually read this, and as you know, I really enjoyed it. I thought the quality of the writing was really mature, really, really great, really just very clean, you know, as the first thing that you're putting out, just a really wonderful, wonderfully written story. And it reminds me of the Time as a Wheel a little bit when I think of the sense I had at the end of that story, which was that your story spans a really long stretch of time because the protagonist is a stone golem who lives a really long time. But there's this wonderful kind of paradox that the story takes place over such a huge span of time. By the end, it takes over a big, you know, part of time. In the beginning, it's you know, focused on shorter time periods. But you have this big span of time, and then at the end, you still have this feeling that it's all been one present moment, which is where I feel like there was a little bit of the mysticism, you know, and the philosophy that comes in at the end there. But I thought that was a really brilliant thing that you kind of juxtapose that in there. And people can pick up that story at your website also, jasondenzel.com. That's jasondenzel.com. It's 99 cents. It's a really fun read, and absolutely want to recommend that to people as well after they're done reading that Dear Robert Jordan letter.
Thank you for those kind words, Moses. Really appreciate that. Yeah, there's all sorts of fun things to talk about in terms of, you know, the Dragonmount store. It's, you know, it's just at dragonmount.com/store. And with the independent title Stone Golem thing, let's sacrifice maybe each one of them here at, one at a time. The for the store itself, you know, I listening to this podcast, listening to other shows, and just being involved wherever I can, you know, in the industry and listening, as probably a lot of listeners are, you know, I follow very closely all the happenings with Amazon and Macmillan and, you know, the antitrust lawsuit and what's going on with, you know, all the ebook readers and where the industry is going in general with ebooks. And it is such a privilege to be in some way to be a part of that in some small way, in that I know, you know, Torrin Macmillan, Macmillan is making such bold strides in making their book DRM free. And in large part, one of the main reasons that they're doing this is to empower, you know, small shops, right? And small businesses. And, you know, Dragonmount, I guess, is a great example of that, that, you know, since we opened our doors in 98, since day one, I've been selling Wheel of Time books, through Amazon's, affiliate program, you know, so every time you click on, you know, if you want to buy the latest book from, you know, the latest Robert Jordan book or any fantasy book, you can click on a link on my site and, you know, on Dragonmount, and, then ends up a small commission, you know, ends up, we keep a small commission just for essentially being a finder's fee for Amazon. And that's well and good. And that's great, because, it helped, not because I'm lining my pockets by any means with any of this stuff, but because it's very expensive to run. It can be very expensive to run a big website. And so for all our server fees and upgrades and bandwidth and everything else that goes into running a large site with a lot of traffic that, you know, times can bring it down, you know, we have a lot of upgrades. And so that money goes to fund that sort of thing. And so since the beginning of our website, we've been doing it through Amazon's affiliate program. But now we have the ability to sell Tor's books, which include the Wheel of Time, of course, at the prices that they set, you know, using the agency model. And the cut that I'm able to hang on to is the same cut that Amazon gets for selling the ebook through their site. And so in that way, you know, it's a better way for us to, you know, collect, it's a better way for us to, remain in the game, and more incentive for us to really push these books, because it's, you know, we get a larger, cut of every sale. And again, that allows us to, you know, upgrade our servers. And trust me, I've been upgrading my servers a lot in anticipation of this final book coming out, right? And so, and we're going to need it still. And so those sales really help out. And I can see this, if I extrapolate beyond just Dragonmount, this also is a great thing, that if there's other sites out there that want to do the same thing and, you know, become essentially a vendor for Macmillan's titles, then, you know, this gives collectively, we're kind of the long tail, if you will, right? I mean, Dragonmount's never going to compete with Amazon in terms of sheer numbers, nor would I want that just for the customer service headache that it presents. But independent retailers, if you have a brick and mortar store, but you have an online presence, now you can sell these ebooks through the, in your store, but you can also sell these 2,500 titles or whatever through your online store and have another source of revenue. So I think this is a great way to empower small businesses, to not compete. In one sense, you're obviously competing with Amazon and Barnes & Noble and Apple, but at the same time, you know, the numbers, I've never competed with those guys, but I can at least be in the game a little bit, you know? And from Dragonmount is, you know, not something that was ever intended to be a big money maker, but again, there's other companies, I know, other small businesses that it is their livelihood. And I think this is a great opportunity for places like that to really get in the game, get some skin in the game. So yeah, aside from the Wheel of Time books, we have pretty much all of Tor's authors, which is great. I try to work with my staff. We're trying to reach out to a lot of these authors and to the editors and to Tor exactly to get them so we can all start featuring some of these authors on our front page and through our newsletter and our blog and whatever else we got going on, our forums. We've done that in the past, but we're looking to really ramp that up so that we can allow other authors who have content that might be appealing to other Wheel of Time fans to get their voices heard by that large audience that Robert Jordan has built up over the years. And in some ways, I kind of see that as a way that, you know, even though Robert Jordan has passed away, that, you know, his legacy is going to continue to help other authors and other writers get their books out. He has such a huge audience, and Dragomat happens to be one of the places that has tapped into that audience and has the ear of that audience. And it's, I almost feel like an obligation I have in a way. Here are all these other great writers who have stuff that is either similar to his, inspired by his, or different yet complementary to his own stuff, that you might like it. So here it is. Come and get it. And, you know, we're going to feature this author today, and you can check out this book here. You can download that free sample and whatnot. And I think that's a wonderful thing. And then conversely, for, without even knowing it, Robert Jordan, you know, helped catapult Brandon Sanderson off into the stratosphere of, you know, publishing these days, right? His career really took off once he got involved with that. Some other author who would otherwise struggle with getting out word about his or her first book, or second book or whatever, could really benefit from getting in front of an audience as large as Robert Jordan's. And so that, I love being able to provide that.
Awesome. That's awesome. You're working on a book too called Beyond the Gates of the Sky. That's your working title. I had a smile when I saw that it's a standalone epic fantasy novel, and you're, of course, a big Wheel of Time fan. So how does the guy who started Dragonmount.com decide to write a standalone novel?
Well, you know, like so many other people, and probably a lot of your listeners, and you know, certainly other writers out there, I've had a long love of both reading and writing, and you know, going back to when, you know, I was a little kid and literally on a typewriter still, you know, plugging away at my first stories and whatnot, right? And I kind of see myself more as a storyteller rather than a specific writer or author or whatever. I love telling stories. I love this genre, and I'll do it however I have the opportunity to do so. And so in the past, in a little bit of filmmaking, and now, you know, the Stone Golem of Qual Jam, a nice little short story, you know, that's out there now. And now the next big thing that's kind of consuming me every day is the novel, as you said. And you're right. You know, when I do kind of feel like I'm traveling down this road that Robert Jordan did in some way, in the sense of, you know, when I sat down to outline, I'm like, okay, this is going to be 150,000 words, this novel. And, I'm at about 150,000 words written now, and we're not near the end. Instead of worrying and stressing out about things like, oh, you know, how, you know, publishers only like books of a certain length these days, you know, my focus is, I'm setting that all aside. I'm going into a bubble where it's just me and the story. I'm going to do my best to tell the story the best way that I know how to tell it, and I'll worry about everything else later in terms of length and volume and everything. It is definitely a standalone, in the sense of, I could see it being part of a series perhaps, but that would be a series that where there were some shared characters, but be mostly a story of the world, a story of the people rather than an individual or a small collection. So this one, all the major characters definitely are resolved at the end of this story. And, that's what I was going for. I think that there's, I don't know, when you're, you know, in writing school or film school or whatever, one of the things that, is to, when you come up with a character, and I usually come up, conceive characters first before I can see plot, and just the way brain works, I guess. And so what I was taught to do, and what I frequently do, is I think about this character and I try to think of the most interesting thing about their lives. And in filmmaking, at least I remember in film school, they said, you know, find the most interesting thing about a character and tell that story. You don't want to tell their second most interesting thing. You don't want to tell their third most. You want to tell the most interesting thing that happens in their life. And there it is. And so, you know, there's probably counter arguments to that, but that really resonated with me. And so my thought is, I'm going to tell the most interesting thing about this character's story, about their life. And that's what I'm going to do. And I'm not right now interested in telling their second most interesting thing. And so focus on that, wrap the story and move on. And yeah, you know, if I think far enough ahead, I do have ideas for what the a sequel would be. But like I said, it would be a different time period. It would be the main characters would be different than who the main characters are in the first book, and to then go and tell their story. But yeah.
Cool. Yeah, it sounds interesting. It's, you know, you talk about the a warlord who, in order to succeed in his various quests, must endure some severe trials, undergo a spiritual awakening by embracing the native magic system. And so I'm sure this is going to be really fascinating, and I will certainly be reading it at some point. So looking forward to that. And I noticed you're posting progress reports on your website as well. And you're hoping to get the first draft done by January 1st, which is actually exactly when I'm hoping to get a full draft done of my second book. So we need to yell at each other a little bit about this, I think.
You know, largely that January deadline that I kind of give myself, it's an arbitrary thing. I am not a professional writer at this time. You know, I have a day job and everything else, right? And so I don't have a deadline. I can take 10 years if I wanted to write this thing, although I'm very excited about this and about this book, and I really see its potential. I think it would be, you know, great to be, you know, professionally published by someone or whatever someday. That's all well and great. I'm excited that people like yourself who have kind of heard about it or have been asking about it and are excited about it. But at the same time, I'm trying to, like I said, remain in my little bubble and not worry about all that stuff. I mean, who knows? Maybe it will never get published. It might become one of those, what do they call them? The cabinet books or whatever. What do you call them? The bookshelf books where basically you write in a bookshelf or in a drawer and never hear from it again because it was just so bad. And so, you know, this is a first novel and we'll see how it goes. But right now I'm just focused on get the words down on the paper, be honest with myself about its own quality, and go from there. The January 1st deadline is mostly just to light a little bit of a fire underneath me to get me to really sit down every day and work on it and plug away. Even if I only get 500 words written in, you know, on a lunch break or something, right? But to which if I get 500 words done an hour, for me, that's good. Speaking personally.
Yeah, yeah. Trunk novel, I think, was the term you were looking for a minute ago. And I have a bold prediction that Beyond the Gates of the Sky will not be a trunk novel. And probably it'll have Tora on the spine someday, I would imagine. But, you know, we'll see, right?
I really appreciate that comment. And, I will definitely take you up on the offer to read through and at least keep me sane. So, and you know, if it sucks, you got to tell me, Moses.
I'm a pretty nice beta reader, but you know, but I do like to give feedback. So, I actually like nasty beta readers. It's weird that often the best beta readers I find are like the nastiest ones too. Like the people who like, I just cringe to read what they have to say, but they're right, you know? Which unfortunately is the way it goes sometimes, I think. But yeah, I kind of have like a softer approach with that kind of thing. Anyway, and you know, we haven't really talked about the film thing. We're getting close to being approaching an hour here, I think, so we won't talk too much longer. But there's some amazing stuff you've done with film. You did a trailer for Towers of Midnight, of course, one of the Wheel of Time books. That's, you can find that on your website too. It's really well done. And I did get a Twitter question from Tobias Carlson. He says, whatever happened to the multiple Memory of Light video trailers that we were all looking forward to?
That's a great question. So the Towers of Midnight book trailer, has been, as far as I know, the most viewed book trailer that Tor's ever put out. You know, we did that on a minuscule budget, and somehow cobbled that together. Everyone, you know, donating their time and so we used every resource we could there. What initially happened is that after that success, because everyone loved it, it was well received, we went to Tor, we being myself and a few other people who I frequently collaborate on and creative projects. We went and went to tour. I actually had the opportunity to fly out to New York and talk to them in person. And in this very surreal moment, I'm sitting in the boardroom on the 13th or 14th floor of the Flatiron Building in New York, talking to editors and VPs at Tor, and pitching this idea for three more book trailers for A Memory of Light. And it was going to be a significant increase in budget. It was going to require a lot of resources. We had this whole plan of just putting out videos. We were going to have all these surveys, and we were going to have all these, you know, giveaways and tie-ins and printouts and print ads. It wasn't just a book trailer we were pitching. It was basically an entire campaign that would complement the campaign that they were going to be doing. The Giants, they loved it. They approved it. It was exciting times. And then after that, the lawyers got involved, to be honest. And there was a concern that with a significant increase in budget for a live action video trailer for The Wheel of Time would infringe too much upon Universal's right to make the film series. And I can't say that, you know, that I'm not in disagreement in the sense of, you know, when a film your studio acquires the rights to property like Wheel of Time or whatever, then, you know, they've invested a lot of money in that. And you want to make sure that, you know, nothing is infringed upon. You want to make sure that someone puts out something that will lower your quality, that will lower the perceived quality or whatever, right? And now I think we would have done a fantastic job. Yes, we probably could have worked it all out with the studio and whatnot. But at the end of the day, there was outside my control. There was different lawyers involved who advised everyone else that, you know, this might be a little too risky. Let's, you know, not worth the trouble. And especially if you can invest a lot of money up front, that money would be lost if the thing's going to get made. We just decided to shelve the project for now. But then what that has morphed into is Dragomount, and we are working actively with Tor on other marketing things, which do include some videos. They won't be live action trailers depicting the characters in the series. But we are doing some videos probably, and we're going to be doing a lot of other ties to help promote the book when it comes out. So we're still doing something, but unfortunately it won't be the really cool, idea that we had. And let me tell you, Mose, one of the best parts was, when this thing got approved is, being able to sit down with Brandon and Team Jordan and coming up with the ideas. And that usually starts with, well, hey, what's happening in the book that you can tell us that we can make into a trailer? Really neat ideas. And once the book has come out, you know, I'll be happy to share with people, you know, what a lot of these ideas were.
Awesome. Well, thank you for answering that. So yeah, last things here, check out dragonmount.com. I'm happy that at this point, you've got two books in that independent section of your bookstore, and you've got the Stone Golem of Kwa Jam.
Yeah, and the other one I think it needs to be said is that it is your book, Moses, the Black God's War, right?
Yes. I was going to mention that, but thank you for saying.
Definitely deserves a third party plug here. That, you know, what we have an independent section up on the. On the dragomount.com/store website, of course, where the goal was that in addition to Tor's books, I wanted to start putting up other other titles that were of high quality and would be of interest to, you know, people who love epic fantasy. And so yours is the first full length novel up there. Delighted and proud to have it up there as such. It's, you know, if you just, you know, told me, oh, you know, I have a book and it's done, here you go, here's the PDF, you know, I wouldn't have stuck it up there. The fact that you have been, as far as I understand it, you've had several thousand sales of it already through many different websites. It's professionally put together, has a beautiful cover. It has been treated and loved, as well as any other novel that could come from a publisher, as far as I can tell. And I think, is it right that you had, you know, several editors look at it professionally, put it through the ringer in terms of both content and copy editing and everything, right? it may be independently published and, you know, available just through, available through Dragman and other venues, but this is absolutely as professional as any other epic fantasy novel out there that I know of, and I, you know, highly recommend it. I know I've had a couple of people buy it already and read it, and they have both through Dragamount and through other places. I've spoken to a couple of people who have bought it through Amazon, and they have, you know, positive things to say about it. So if you are listening, and I know you are, your reader in your home on your computer or on your iPod, please take the time to check out The Black God's Book. Get it on Amazon. You can get it on dragamount.com, and there's free samples. There's even, I think, you can download like an EPUB that has the first how many chapters, Moses?
Yeah, there's a novella also titled The Black God's War. When people search for it, that it's got the first 15 chapters of the 85 chapter book. So that's a freebie that's out in a lot of places too. Gives people a chance to see if it's something they might like. So yeah, thank you. I didn't mean for you to say all those things, but I really appreciate you saying it. One of my favorite comments I've gotten in any of my reviews, I have an Amazon review where, someone said, what did he say? Let's see here. This is a great book to get into this genre, or if you're feeling like I'm feeling, a great way to pass the time until the coming of book 14. So that was like, yeah, win, you know, that was great. All right. So very last thing. Do you know who Richard Fife is?
Yes, I do.
I'm guessing you knew who he was, because he's trolling you on Twitter today, and he used the hashtag trolling. He just wanted to know what happened to your hair.
Richard and I, we each year at JordanCon, which is an annual Wheel of Time convention, and usually we as soon as we show up in the doors, we say hello to each other and we begin mocking each other, and you know, throughout the night, as more and more alcohol flows, the insults get worse, and you know, the fists start flying. In terms of the hair, the hair was naturally going, I guess, and so I just decided to take the razor to it, and I think I'm much more handsome as a result.
Well played, sir. All right. Well, it was fantastic to talk to you, and hopefully we'll have some more, you know, Wheel of Time news coming out on the show in the coming months. So, you know, listeners, stay tuned for that, and maybe we can get Brandon on again, or who knows who. So, anyway, great to talk to you, and we'll be in touch.
Thanks a lot. It was a pleasure.
Please visit AdventuresInSciFiPublishing.com for show notes, videos, reviews, and more, and email us at AdventuresInSciFiPublishing@gmail.com. Some sound effects from the Free Sounds Project. Music by Asymmetry, found at MusicAlley.com. No authors were permanently damaged in the making of this podcast.